Husker Doc Talk Podcast, 2016, Episode 8. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. This podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. The Huskers now 2-0 on the season, coming off a weekend in which they beat the crap out of Wyoming. We'll get to that in a bit. I'm Travis Justice, joined by former Husker All-American and now a very smart and really good anesthesiologist, Dr. Rob Zadiska.
How are you doing tonight?
You know, I'm doing all right.
You look all right.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I really get into our theme song. I like our theme song.
I've always liked the theme song.
The Husker Doc Talk Podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. The Remington Trophy is presented annually to the nation's top center. Named after former Husker great Dave Remington, the Remington Trophy Banquet will take place January 14th, 2017 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. As the year moves on, we'll keep you informed on who this year's Ford Legends Award winner is and who the featured speaker will be. The Remington Trophy presentation benefits the Boomer Esiason Foundation, where Dave is the president. Cystic fibrosis is a chronic disease that affects the lungs and digestive system of about 30,000 children and adults in the United States and 70,000 worldwide. For more on how you can help fight cystic fibrosis and help those who have it, visit esiason.org. And coming up a little bit later in this podcast, we're going to have the Remington Trophy Watch List Spotlight. We also want to welcome Husker Hounds to the Doc Talk Podcast this season, now with three stores in Omaha. Husker Hounds is the best place to buy Nebraska gifts and officially licensed apparel. You have to show your big red pride this week as the Huskers take on Oregon, so don't wait till game day. Get what you need and what you want today. Get to one of the three Omaha locations to load up, including the brand new Husker Hound store at 149th and Maple, which is now open. And for online orders, make sure to go to huskerhounds.com. And we also want to thank huskermax.com for sharing the Husker Doc Talk podcast. For up-to-date Husker news, visit huskermax.com. And Dr. Rob, it's customary that you and I start a Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy drinking a beer, and tonight it's going to be plural, as in beers. You brought the beer tonight, so what do we have here?
We have a Lagunitas beer. We've got the Aunt Sally, which it says it's a unique dry-hopped, sweet tart, sour mash. You know, I ran in to try and grab something out of Oregon, which there are plenty of excellent Oregon beers. My kids are big fans of the glow-in-the-dark Dead Guy Ale fake tattoos that they hand out at several places around town from Rogue Brewing Company. But, you know, I went a little south and went California for this one.
This is really good.
It's a tasty beer. I got to be honest, this might be my favorite beer from Lagunitas. Usually every Lagunitas beer is kind of a, here's a way to drink hops. Another way to drink hops. Here's yet another variety.
But you know what this is? Drink hops. This is another way to drink hops.
This is like a sour hopped beer. It's like a sour IPA, basically.
This is really, really good.
Yeah, I like it. It's kind of it's like a sour California pale ale.
All right, we're going to have a picture of the Aunt Sally, what it can look like on our Twitter page. So if you're going to need to follow us on Twitter, at Doc Talk Sports. We've got a six-pack, so if we start slurring our words by the end of the night, that means we've gone through the entire six-pack. Except it will take me like 45 minutes to get through one. I'm joking there, but Rob will have this whole thing gone. You'll have five gone by the time I have one gone.
I'm not going to do that. I got to leave a couple for you.
Okay, you'll have four gone before I have two gone.
There we go.
That's how it is. Rob takes four, I take two. It works that easy.
Yeah, but I also outweigh you by about 70 pounds.
I don't know if it's that much. I'm a pretty fat dude anymore. But again, Aunt Sally from Lagunitas, it's the Husker Doc Talk beer of the week, and it's mighty tasty, so we really encourage you to try it. Rob, before we even talk about the Wyoming game, because that was a blowout, and there's stuff to talk about, let's jump right into the Oregon game, because this is a unique week for Nebraska. This will be by far the Huskers' biggest challenge of the non-conference portion of the season. And it's weird because you're going to have a team that in Oregon that doesn't want to control the clock. They just want to score all the time. I mean, if you look at the time of possession now, Oregon's almost 10 minutes behind its opponents in time of possession.
Yeah, Virginia actually had more time of possession than Oregon did in last week's game.
Yeah, it's interesting. Right now, Oregon averaging 25 minutes and 36 seconds of time of possession. Their opponents, 34 minutes and 24 seconds. But the deal is they score a lot of points and they score fast.
Well, and if you look at the yardage difference in that Oregon-Virginia game, there was almost a 300-yard differential.
That's crazy.
Oregon was, I think, 300, or I'm sorry, I think Oregon was about 632 yards. They had, I think, 330 passing, 300 rushing. They averaged over 6.5 a carry running the ball. And that's pretty impressive. Freeman, their running back, got 200 yards on the ground. That's impressive numbers right there, because it's kind of at least on paper, that's an offense that's hitting on all cylinders. And it's an offense that's had a lot of changes. You look at the last several years for Oregon, you've gone from Bilotti to Chip Kelly. You had Scott Frost kind of cut his teeth and come up under Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly leaves. Frost becomes the offensive coordinator. He's the offensive coordinator for, what, 2 seasons?
Yeah.
And then he's gone. So you've got yet another offensive coordinator. You've still got Helfrich there as the head coach. They're still hitting on all cylinders offensively. It's awfully impressive with what they've been able to do. I think a lot of it comes out of recruiting. They've just got some very impressive athletes up there. They're maintaining the system, though, too. They're getting new coordinators. They're getting new assistant coaches. Guys are not changing the formula.
Well,
I mean, imagine if Tom Osborne said, "I'm retiring. Here's my playbook." And Solich ran the exact same playbook that Osborne ran, which he did not.
That's true. He did not.
He did not. And let's say Solich leaves, retires, and Bill Callahan comes in and runs the exact same Tom Osborne playbook. And Bill Callahan leaves, and Bo Pelini comes in and runs the exact same offensive playbook. That's the equivalent of what's happened at Oregon.
I mean, it's changed a little bit in the fact that I think it's sped up maybe a little bit more, and there's always some adjustments, but you're right. It's virtually it's adapted under the same concept from Bilotti all the way through.
It is. Now, I think that speeding up, though, was kind of the twist that Chip Kelly put on
it.
I think he took it from this wide-open, high-flying offense and said, let's do this and let's see how fast we can do it. But you kind of hit the nail on the head. A lot of yards, a lot of points. They do it as fast as they can, and they do not care about time of possession. It's we're going to try and get down the field, and we're going to gash you as quickly as we can.
So I don't worry about the Nebraska offense in this game. We'll get to the Nebraska offense, but let's focus on the Nebraska defense, because they are going to take on a team that is averaging 276 yards a game on the ground, 301-yard pass. Oregon and the quack attack, 8 yards per play, Rob. 8 yards per play.
Oh, it's impressive. Now, there's a couple of caveats here I think you got to pay attention to, and I'm not trying to be all rose-colored glasses here on Nebraska's chances. I think Nebraska's decidedly an underdog going into this game. A couple of things. The one strength that Mark Bankers had in the slightly over 1 year in Lincoln is that he's done a pretty solid job of shutting down the run. Now, Oregon's a whole nother animal when it comes to running the ball. Their running game is as wide open as most teams' passing games. It's a very wide open, very hard to predict. This is not a classic between the tackles running team. The quarterbacks can run. The running backs can run. They're going to be throwing wide receivers on those jet sweeps at you. It's a very wide open, hard to defend against running game. However, if you look at it, you look at who they've played.
That's true.
I mean, look at Virginia. Virginia's atrocious. The Richmond Spiders scored 37 on Virginia and beat them in their season opener.
pretty bad football team.
That's sad.
That is really sad.
Oregon scored one more touchdown against Virginia than Richmond did.
So what you're saying is we don't really know how good Oregon is.
We don't. Now, do I think they're good? Yeah, I think they're pretty good. I think they've got some incredibly good athletes. I'm not sold on them in terms of the quality of the opponents they've played, though. Virginia's atrocious. That is a bad, bad football team. I don't know if they're as bad as Northwestern. But that is a bad football
team. I think what Nebraska has to do, and you correct me if I'm wrong, this is just my analysis, and looking at, because they're getting 8 yards per carry, they're in third and short situations. Right now they're 16 of 27 and almost a 60% clip on third down conversion. I think Nebraska's really got to get them in third and five, third and six, third and seven situations.
If they can keep them in third and long, I think they're okay. Now, keep in mind, they're averaging, like I said, I think against Virginia they averaged 6.7 a carry. I mean, that's... I'm sorry. They average 6.7 a carry. So if it's third and six, that's a makeable play with a running play. Again, I don't think Nebraska's defense is remotely as horrible as Virginia's is. But if Nebraska can keep them in the second and long, third and long, and this is kind of stating the obvious. I mean, that's kind of what you want to do against any team.
That's true. But this team more, because I think if you look at it, I mean, they've already given up eight sacks on the season. Oregon has. So yeah. So I'm look at that, probably third and long situations, forced to pass. If you make it third and one, third and two, they're converting. Third and long, they're not. And their offensive line and pass protection is not that great.
And I will say, compared to a lot of teams, Oregon's offense, if you have them in third and one, third and two, that is a wide open offense. They have lots of options out of third and short. They've got so many run options, so many pass options. It's ridiculous. I mean, Oregon's offense, I can't even begin to fathom the size of the playbook. And I remember I had a conversation with Scott Frost, and this is a few years ago when he was the running backs coach there, about the size of the Oregon playbook. And it's absolutely obscene, the options they have. But if you have them in a third and short, and again, I know this is stating the obvious, it's just that for Oregon, it's kind of it's on steroids. All teams, if you're in third and one, third and two, third and three, you've got more options than if you're in third and six or third and eight. It's just that for Oregon, you're talking about a factor of 10 greater in terms of what those options are. Like I said, though, it's just Oregon is really kind of an unknown quantity right now. This is not the Chip Kelly teams that were going to the national title games or going into the national title playoffs. This is not your classic Oregon team that has a pretty darn good defense. This is not the classic Oregon team that has Marcus Mariota at quarterback. It's not. This is a step down. I still think they're very good. Like Nebraska, they're a little unproven. It's kind of hard to know exactly what we've got out of either one of these teams.
Obviously, Mike Riley and his staff is going to have a much better idea on what Oregon has because of their relationship going back to Oregon State. We do know this. There's speed and there's athleticism. There's no doubt there's speed and athleticism there. Royce Freeman, the running back, he has 297 yards, averaging 9 yards per carry, already four touchdowns. Brooks James.
200 of that came against Virginia.
Tony Brooks James, also a pretty decent running back. He's averaging almost 40 a game, but he's touching at a 7 yard per clip time every time he touches the ball. Already 11 guys run the football for Oregon. 11 guys. That's a lot. I think the unknown factor is going to be Dakota Prukup, the quarterback. Here's a guy.
He's a grad transfer.
Grad transfer, much like they had last year. This will be an atmosphere where I think you can rattle a quarterback in this type of situation.
And that's a guy that I think if Nebraska's defense can get on him, get a couple of hits, and he's a guy, they ask their quarterbacks to carry the ball. If Nebraska can get some really good hard hits on that guy, if they can get some hits and passing situations on him, this is, I think they can rattle him a little bit. Now, he's been pretty solid for Oregon thus far.
But, again, have you been tested in front of an atmosphere like Memorial Stadium?
No, and he has
92,000 people.
And he has not. And, you know, well, and I think a lot of the rest of the Oregon players have been. I mean, they've played in some big games, and they've played against some very good teams. I think that with Pro Cup, I think you're in a situation where you've got a guy who's he's one of these grad transfers. This is not a guy who has been in that system extensively for the last 3-4 years. So does he know the system as well as, say, Marcus Mariota or any of the other Oregon quarterbacks have who've been there and kind of cut their teeth coming up within that system? No, he hasn't. He's going to have a slightly more superficial understanding of this offense compared to the other quarterbacks that Oregon's had in past years. And I think that kind of plays into it. Again, like I said, it's we can talk the stats. We can talk about what Oregon's capabilities are. We can talk about recruiting and flashy uniforms and how fast these guys are.
Let's be honest, so you're kind of looking forward to see the unis. The unis are pretty cool.
I don't give a rat's ass.
Oh, I forgot.
God, I just don't.
I forgot.
I don't.
I know. I think they're pretty cool. I get into the uniform thing.
I just don't. I'm one of those guys where it is such a secondary thing for me.
This is the biggest game for Nebraska since when? This is the big one.
I don't look at this as that big of a game, and here's why.
Okay.
It's kind of a win-win for Nebraska.
A win-win. So if they lose, it's a win.
If Nebraska loses this game, as long as it's not just an utter thrashing,
which it will not, but which it's not going to be. Their defense isn't good enough.
Well, I sure as hell hope not. But as long as it's a competitive game, Nebraska still loses. Even if they lose by a couple of scores, most people are going to look at it and go like, well, for Pete's sakes, it's Oregon. You got Phil Knight's budget and every incredibly fast kid on the East Coast who didn't go to USC and got their ass kicked by Alabama is there. No kidding, they beat Nebraska. Nebraska's in the midst of a rebuilding project. Or Oregon's idea of rebuilding is coming off of last year's 9-4 season.
Here's the deal. If
Nebraska loses, everybody's going to be like, well, yeah, but for God's sakes, it was Oregon. What did you expect? If Nebraska wins, everybody's going to be, holy crap, we beat Oregon. That was great. Of course, I'm going to look at it and something going like, well, yeah, but it was a 2-0 Oregon team coming in that their signature win 2 games into the season is over this atrocious Virginia team.
If Nebraska's defense can force turnovers like it did last week, Nebraska wins the football game. I bet
Wyoming wasn't very good,
but it was a closer game. I mean, it wasn't out of hand.
It wasn't out of hand, and I say that it's kind of a plus minus thing here, where I look at it and go, okay, you know what? On the minus side, for God's sakes, for the second week in a row, Nebraska's essentially only one score ahead against a very bad team at the end of the third quarter. I think they were, 21-10 ahead of Fresno at the end of the third last week? Was it 17-10 or 24-17 at the end of the third? They were one touchdown ahead of Wyoming at the end of the third quarter. Both games, the floodgates just opened up in the fourth quarter. And Nebraska had a big hand in them. When you look at the turnovers, when you look at the aggressiveness in terms of going after the ball on defense, when you look at the play calling on offense, I get it. Nebraska did what it needed to do to pile it on in the fourth quarter. But it would be really nice to see Nebraska with a little bit more than a one-score game at the end of the third quarter against some pretty bad teams. Now, the plus side of it is that I look at this Wyoming game. Nebraska had 2 easy scores that they completely left on the field prior to the end of the third quarter against Wyoming. I mean, it should have been a 3-touchdown lead at the end of the third quarter. He had Armstrong's interception at the end of the first half, where he threw into I say triple coverage. It was really quadruple coverage. There was a fourth defender back behind Seath and Carter on that play. I still have no idea what the guy was trying to do, other than I still think Armstrong thinks of himself as the type of guy who can make that play and ignores the fact that in reality, Tom Brady doesn't make that throw.
Before we get talking more about the Nebraska offense and what it has to do against the Oregon Ducks and their defensive attack, let's talk about this week's Remington Trophy watch list spotlight as it shines on Illinois' Joe Spencer. Joe is a 6'4", 300-pound senior from Mason, Ohio. He missed the Fighting Illini's opener because of an injury. He did, however, return to start at center against North Carolina. He started 10 games as a center as a sophomore. He started all 12 games as a center as a junior. Not only is he one of the most experienced centers in college football, he's a damn good guy. Working on his MBA after he graduated with a degree in finance in May. He's a Remington Trophy watch list. That's why we're talking about it. He's a Werfel Trophy watch list. That goes to community service. National Football Foundation Scholar Athlete Award nominee. AFCA Good Works Team nominee. And helped the Illini's Fit for Life team, which raised over $21,000 for charity. That's a pretty good guy running that offensive line.
That is a great guy. Now, on the flip side, kind of like last week's Dylan Utter, this is 2 weeks in a row we got guys who are just no chance at the NFL.
And that's why he's getting his MBA in finance.
He will do great things in life. You know, you just look at some of the other guys on
why
the
doesn't
watch
he have it? He's 6'4", 300 pounds. Why doesn't he have a shot at the NFL?
I just don't think he's got all the tools. There's a big difference between some of these other guys. When you look at Allen at Michigan State, when you look at Elflin at Ohio State, I don't think he's got the snap quickness and then the quickness off the ball after the snap when you engage those defensive linemen. For a big guy, he's not the strongest guy in terms of power. You look at Allen, there's a guy who can really, especially for a young guy too, Allen's one of these guys who can bowl up against those 325-pound Big Ten nose guards and easily can move those guys around the field. Same thing for some of the other guys we've talked about. I'm drawing a complete blank here. The guy from Iowa.
Well, James Daniels is he's the center now, but he was hurt last week. So, and then they moved in a different guy who wasn't even – Welsh was going to be the guy, and Welsh isn't going to be – he's at right guard now. They're all over the place.
Okay, it's Welsh that I'm thinking of. But, I mean, Welsh is a guy that I think they just love him at guard, and I think they've got him pretty well entrenched there. He's a guy who, in terms of the physical tools, there's a big difference between just height and weight when I talk about physical tools. Are you somebody who's got incredible speed, quickness, and strength? You look at guys who've played in the past, and I'm talking about even recent past. Well, I guess in my mind, it's recent past. You look at Mark Stepnoski, Tom Nalen at Denver. These were guys who struggled to keep their weight above 260 pounds during the course of an NFL season. And these were guys who would routinely flat back 290-pound defensive tackles and nose guards because of speed, quickness, and just sheer strength. And I just don't think this guy has it. He's a big guy. He's a great guy. Don't get me wrong. He's probably somebody who's completely cut from the mold I was. Highly, highly intelligent. Decent football player, not a great one. He's just a guy I'm saying, is he going to make the cut at the end of the year when it comes to the Remington Trophy? And I'm just saying he's not going to be there.
That's why they have watch lists. It makes guys feel good.
Yeah, I know. Plus, I'm still kind of pissed off about that whole Illinois game last year, so I hate everybody from Illinois. So
I could tell you a story about me host, you know, because I host the Iowa Hawkeye Call-In Show on WHO in Des Moines, and I'm not going to get into it, but Husker fans
what?
Were...
No, oh, Husker fans are
they
Illinois.
Were because I was posting my Facebook Live stuff, and people are like, oh, they don't play anybody. Look at their schedule last year, and I didn't want to be a dick.
I would agree with you, though. It's not like Nebraska played exactly this freaking gauntlet of a schedule either.
Yeah, that's why I said, listen, I don't want to get into it, but let's just not go there. I mean, Nebraska won big, Iowa won big. Just everybody enjoy their day.
Nice win over the Cyclones.
Iowa State's horrible. Iowa State may be one of the worst.
They are the Virginia of the Big 12.
Oh, my God. They may make Kansas look good. And Frank Solich.
And that is hard to do.
And Frank Solich and the Ohio Bobcats kicked the shit out of them this last week. How bad is it when Ohio goes and kicks the shit out of you on your home field? This is a week
when
after.
You're a Big 12 team and Ohio's doing that to you. Well, look. I mean, if you look at Iowa State, in all reality, I got to be honest. This is sad. Is Northern Iowa Division II or
Division One Double A?
They're One Double A. Still, you got a One Double A team beating you.
Yes,
that's just pretty sad.
Yes, it is. So,
you know, what's even worse is I guarantee you that all 17 Cyclone fans are sitting around going, "God, I can't wait till wrestling season."
They are. Yeah, and they're not even good at wrestling anymore. They're waiting for basketball season. They're halfway decent in basketball.
Isn't their best wrestler Iowa's head coach now?
No.
Wait, Iowa's wrestling coach. Who is it?
Tom Brands.
For some reason, I thought he was a Cyclone.
No, Dan Gable was a Cyclone.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe you heard of that guy. Won like 15 national titles. Didn't give up a point in the 72 Olympics.
He was pretty good.
He was pretty good.
He was okay.
Yeah, he's all right.
Had an open container violation. Spent the night doing push-ups in his jail cell.
You want to crack me another beer, by the way?
Do you know who's there for you?
You are.
I'm there for you.
Because I'm loving Aunt Sally. And Aunt Sally's got a little pinup picture on the six-pack thing.
Aunt Sally might become my next everyday beer, like everyday fridge beer.
I know. It's really, really good. So let's move on
I'm watching you sipping this beer, and it's almost kind of scary because every time you take a sip, you're like, oh my.
Having an orgasm.
You're kind of like quietly mouthing, God, to yourself.
Thank you, Aunt Sally.
I've had a couple of my son's youth football team coaches tell me we got to watch the language because their kids are listening to the podcast. And we're dropping S-bombs. And
that's the first but you know, I think that's the first time I've cussed all year.
Yeah, Jack's telling his dad that, like, hey, that's Coach Rob just said, you know what? We got to watch what we say.
But see, you cuss more than I do.
Well, last couple weeks I have.
Yes, you have. So let's turn our attention. And by the way, the Remington Trophy presentation coming up on January 14th at the Rococo Theater. If you want tickets, want some information, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. We want to thank Dave Remington for sponsoring and presenting the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Let's move on to the offense now. Because Nebraska is going to get more touches, more opportunities than Oregon, because Oregon allows that. They're going to control the clock because Oregon allows that. To me, Rob, this game has 52-45 written all over it. No?
You know, I don't know if it'll be that high scoring because I think a lot of what Oregon's done in their first couple of games was very much predicated on the run game. And I can see Nebraska kind of limiting what they're going to do with the run game. Oregon's going to get their yards. They're going to get their points. I could see Nebraska limiting it to a degree. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I guess I'm kind of looking at more sort of one of those 42-36, which I don't know if that's that different than what you threw out there.
I mean, because I'm talking, because I have the winner scoring 50. I mean, you're saying 42. Okay, what does Nebraska – I think the better question I need to pose to you, and this is getting away from the offense, but what does the Nebraska defense have to hold Oregon to? Not yards, but points.
Ooh, that's a good question.
Nebraska give up 45. Do they win?
I think if Nebraska gives up 45, they're losing.
Okay.
I do. I just don't know if Nebraska's offense is wide open enough to keep up with them. I think if Nebraska's defense can hold Oregon to 31 or less, Nebraska wins. Now, and part of the reason I say that is I'm not completely sold on Oregon's defense. When Virginia can come in and score almost four touchdowns against you.
And that leads me into Nebraska's offense. keep it simple. Keep it on the ground. Do you have to do anything fancy?
Burn clock. I would, if you were going to tell me, and I'm going to probably eat my words after saying this. Do I want to see the offense we saw against Fresno State where you saw 51 rushes? Or do I want to see the offense that you saw against Wyoming where you saw Armstrong putting it up in the air and becoming Nebraska's all-time touchdown pass leader? You know, I think I want to see the Fresno State offense. I want to see Nebraska pounded. I want to see them wear them out. I want to see them do to Oregon what they did against UCLA. I think that when you look at what these two teams have to offer, I think it's a case of you've got. I don't want to say Oregon's a similar team to UCLA. I think the quality of athletes. I think the general style's a little bit similar. I think you don't have a defense that it's not a classic Big Ten defense where you've got these 330-pound interior defensive linemen where you have the 250-pound, 240-pound middle linebackers. I think it's a team that if Nebraska can establish a run, wear these guys out a little bit. You've got a travel roster that's going to be restricted a little bit for Oregon. You always lack a smidge of depth on the road in these road games. I think that if Nebraska can come out, control the clock, you could see a situation where Oregon jumps out to a 14-point, 17-point lead. And then all of a sudden kind of starts running out of gas and Nebraska starts really chewing up clock, scoring some points.
You brought up a good point because even Virginia to a point did this. I was watching a little bit of it. And
like I said, Virginia had – it wasn't a big advantage. Virginia, I think it was like a 30 – they had like a two-minute
but what I'm saying,
time advantage.
But what I'm saying to Husker fan is that if all of a sudden you look up the clock and Oregon's up – 28-7. All's not lost. You can
not
come back.
Yeah, because God forbid that happens. But
no, but
that could be like early second quarter.
Yes,
in this game, Oregon runs out of a little bit of steam. Their defense gets tired, and all of a sudden, I mean, even a team that's one of these quick hitters scores fast, sort of the track team off to the races kind of situations. If Nebraska starts seriously chewing up the clock, you look at what they did against UCLA, and there's been other games that Nebraska's done that. Take Nebraska, Ohio State in their first year in the Big Ten was kind of a classic example. Ohio State jumped out to a reasonable lead. And that was a team that had Miller at quarterback for Ohio State. They had very good running backs. They had good wide receivers. They had a great offensive line, a solid defense. Ohio State's defense, though, was kind of – it was a little bit depth-wise. It was limited. They got tired. Late in the second half, Tim Beck, it was one of like the three times ever he actually did anything smart in his career. Nebraska just started pounding the ball on the ground and just flat-out wore them out, kept the ball out of Ohio State's hands. And Nebraska started scoring points. If Nebraska got even a single stop on defense, it almost equated to a touchdown for Nebraska just because Ohio State's defense was so tired late in the game. If they can do that to Oregon where you get to a situation where if your defense can get a single stop and your offense has been chewing up clock, you go back out there, it's almost a guaranteed touchdown. You're just going to move down the field, wear these guys out, and score. If Nebraska can wear Oregon's defense out and get some key stops, I think they've got a shot.
So what, what's the key? The offensive line, Tommy Armstrong, the running game?
There's going to be a few keys. One, I think they've got to establish a very good running game. I think if Nebraska can run the ball, run it consistently, and run it well, and I'm not talking about what you did against Fresno State where they ran it a lot of the time. I'm saying where you run it a lot, but it's productive. You don't have to be Oregon getting 6.7 against Virginia, but if Nebraska can go out there and get 3.5, 4.5 yards a carry, and if Riley and Langsdorf are comfortable sticking with that, and can burn up a lot of time, I think that's one of the keys of the game. One of the other keys of the game, you've got to get some stops on defense. You're going to give up some yardage, and you're going to give up some points against Oregon. But if you can bend and not break, if you can keep them out of the end zone and keep that score within shooting distance, I think you've got a shot. The other thing is, and this is just a brutally obvious comment, but for Nebraska, it's always a crapshoot. If you can eliminate the mistakes, the penalties, Tommy being Tommy and chucking the ball into triple coverage, it's not that it's one of those, oh, he threw the ball up and was trying to make a play. It's, he literally was throwing the ball straight into three defenders, hoping that, well, maybe one of them will fall down. It's just, that's a situation that you're just not going to get that.
By the way, you're
just not going to get the ball past three guys who are forming a picket fence in front of the wide receiver.
I tell this story all the time because I remember as a young reporter, young television anchor, I go back. It would have been your senior year. I'd go back to. I remember, you know, Tom Osborne would come in and he'd start his news conference every single week talking about the obvious, and that was usually if he thought the special teams was going to mean something, he'd start off talking about the special teams and just the real importance of the kicking game, the punting game. And you're like, come on, Tom, you're stating the obvious. We all know that. But usually he'd come back stating the obvious sometimes goes over a lot of people's heads and you take the obvious for granted. And he was right that usually it's those little things that matter. Sometimes the obvious things that are right in front of you, you don't see them. And that's why you state the obvious, because the obvious means so much game.
And I don't think people realize how much those things matter. I mean, there's kind of this million and one little things that everybody. I mentioned my kids' seventh grade football team earlier. They know turning the ball over is a bad thing. They know penalties are a bad thing. We're talking about highly developed college athletes, and they are making fundamental mistakes that against Fresno and Wyoming are not exactly costing you the games. This will cost you the game against Oregon, against Ohio State, against Wisconsin, against...
And you mentioned holding,
probably not Northwestern. They're pretty bad.
You mentioned holding them out of the red zone or out of the end zone. If they get in the red zone, it's a tough thing to keep them out of the end zone. 9 of 12 red zone touchdowns this year. 9 of 12.
It's not 9 of 12 scores. That's 9 of 12 touchdowns.
They are 11 of 12 on scores. 9 of 12 touchdowns.
That's impressive.
That's very impressive. Against, you know, again, not great competition.
Oh, it's horrible competition.
Before we let you go, a couple of here are the Nebraska players that are characterized as questionable by Mike Riley heading into the Oregon game. Defensive tackle Mick Stoltenberg, receiver Brandon Riley, he's got a hamstring. Receiver Alonzo Moore with a shoulder injury, and cornerback Lamar Jackson with a groin injury. Those guys are questionable.
I think you're going to see all of them except maybe Stoltenberg. I think you're going to see the receivers. I think you're going to see Jackson back out there. I'd love to see Stoltenberg back out there, because one of the things against this Oregon defense, obviously they not only do they run a no-huddle, they run a fast no-huddle. I mean, there is literally no time in between plays. You're not going to substitute in between plays, but Nebraska needs to have that capability to substitute in between series. And I think defensive line is going to be key in this game. And if they can have Stoltenberg back out there, that gives them a true two deep at those interior defensive tackle spots, and that's something that they're going to need. You lose the underbelly of that defense, and I think all is lost. Nebraska's got, for the first time in a few years, Nebraska has very solid depth at linebacker. You can run off Nebraska's second-string linebacker core and tell most fans, hey, here's the starting linebackers, and most fans would be like, oh, yeah, that sounds correct. They are that good at linebacker, and I think Nebraska's very deep at that linebacker spot. And they're going to need it. They're going to need it at defensive back. Like I said, you're not going to be able to substitute during series, but in between series, Nebraska is going to have to switch out their defensive players, and they're going to have to keep those guys fresh, and losing a guy like Stoltenberg can definitely hurt.
That is your Dr. House Call. on the Remington Trophy Husker Doc Talk podcast. Hey, folks, make sure to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. Again, at Doc Talk Sports. Go ahead and follow the Husker Doc Talk podcast right here on Podbean if you're on Podbean. If you're on iTunes, you know, I don't ask for this very much, but if you could give us a nice review or like the podcast on iTunes, I'm told that helps us rank a little bit higher. We have a lot of listens. We'd like more because, well, we think this is the best Husker Doc Talk or podcast out there. Big thanks to the Remington Trophy for presenting this podcast. Also, Husker Hounds for the sponsorship and HuskerMax.com. Nebraska, Oregon, it's going to be a good one. Enjoy it on Saturday. Dr. Rob and I will be back next week with another edition of the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.